Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the first episode of Reality Check here on the Reality of Wrestling YouTube channel. I'm going to be your host. My name is Brad Gilmore. I am one of the voices of the Reality of Wrestling. I've been one of the voices for almost 8 years now, and I'm excited to talk to my very first guest. You see her on the screen. She is a former Reality of Wrestling Diamonds Division champion. If you follow her on social media, you know that she has a moniker, The Pink Dream, and she joins me right now. That is Miss Alex Gracia. Alex, welcome to the show.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
How are you? How are you doing during quarantine?
I'm good. Like I said, like I had an excuse to get ready today and like actually like put my face on and do my hair. So that was a nice change.
Like we were talking a little bit before, but it's been a really odd experience for everybody. But I think that, you know, for me, you know, doing radio or talking or doing whatever, I can still do that at my house. For you being a wrestler, there's no shows going on. There's no wrestling going on. So I don't know, what's it been like for you? You know, bumpless for 2.5 months. I guess that's probably the best part, right?
Yeah. So there has been like no working whatsoever. But like the way I like to think about it is I'm like, so many people are working from home. So like, what was I doing that took my time up like away from the ring? So that's why I'm really trying to focus on like my like health and nutrition and just like working out there and like just doing some other things that I can control and just really focus on those right now.
It's got to be though a different experience, especially when you're an athlete, when you're a performer, you have that routine down, right? Okay, I'm going to go Monday, I'm going to go to the gym. Tuesday, I'm going to go roll around. You know, Wednesday's more training, Thursday, whatever. So how have you tried to stay on that as much as possible without being inside the squared circle?
I've tried to make up a new routine. So I have my new routine like every single day. So like I wake up, I review my Spanish, and then I go run and work out. And then I come back and then look at my Spanish a little bit and then like maybe watch Lizzie McGuire or something, whatever's on Disney Plus that day. And then I'll do my second workout and then I'll like end the day kind of reviewing my Spanish again. And then I go to sleep and it's literally the same day every single day.
I know. I feel a little bit like Bill Murray in Groundhog's Day during this time. But what's the Spanish about? Why are you reviewing Spanish every day?
Yes. So I realized just how much more beneficial it would be if I was a lot more fluent. And since I was in Mexico earlier in this year, the year started off great. I went to CMLO. I was like, it was hot. But so when I came back, I was like, I'm definitely want to start practicing that a little bit more. So I've like had a Spanish course that I enrolled in, so I'm doing that like every single day. That takes up a lot of time and it can get very frustrating.
Oh man, I don't even know how anybody speaks Spanish with all the different ways you change the word. No, it's not my thing. but are you a native Texan?
Yes.
Okay. And your family from here too?
So my parents were first generation. So all of their parents were from different countries, whether it was Spain or Mexico. And then my mom's mom was from England. So they were none of them. They're just all over the place. And then my mom and dad were here. So I'm second generation.
So growing up, they weren't speaking Spanish around you. It was mainly English. So like my girlfriend, she's Lebanese, and you know, the family spoke Arabic all the time around her, so she can find her way through Arabic, mm-hmm. but not fluently. Are you the same?
Yes, because my dad is fluent, but my mom isn't. So it was just not regularly spoken in the house. So okay. I'm like, why? Now we have conversations like every day in the evening, like we'll talk on the phone and we'll just have our own little conversation in Spanish. And I'm like, this is what I needed to be doing my whole life. But I was like, better late than never, I guess.
So let's talk though a little bit about your early life. Cause for me, I think everybody has a similar story, at least from the people that I've talked to, of how they got into wrestling. It's always something like my parents were a fan, my older brother or sister was a fan, or I was just flipping through channels and I saw it one day and I was hooked. What was it for you? When did you first get exposed to pro wrestling?
I remember being very young. Before my little sister was born, like I was the only girl around. So I was surrounded by like all my cousins and they all pretty much were into wrestling, especially my older cousin who I'm closest to in age, and then my brother. So that was always around. But I was always like intrigued and like just so interested, but never do you think I'm gonna go and do that with my life. Like, it's like watching a movie. You don't think like I'm gonna go be a superstar or a movie star or something like that. Like, so it was just always there, but you don't think that it's actually like a reality to make that your career.
Yeah, I think most people, it's just you become a fan of it and you think about a career path maybe when you get older. But I've always wanted to know, so Attitude Era, I think you and I are around the same age. So, you know, get into the Attitude Era, maybe early 2000s is when we both started kind of watching. And for a young man, pro wrestling was very fun to watch for a lot of reasons, especially when it came to the women's division. There was a lot to appreciate.
Very different.
Very different than it is now. And that's kind of what I wanted to know. Like, how was it for you being a young female fan and seeing the women showcased in the way that they were? At the time, the women athletes weren't treated as they are today. They were, you know, more so to kind of pretty up the picture. They were the bikini contests, you know, the dance-offs, the whatever. How was it for you? Did any of that compute, or did you just see, you know, badass women going out there and entertaining the masses?
So more of the stuff that wasn't as appropriate for children, I like, that was probably one of those moments like, turn this TV off right now.
Yeah.
So I wasn't like, I didn't realize until you like really go back and see everything, you're like, that's what was happening. Cause you're just so like, it's almost like watching a movie with your parents and something inappropriate. And they're like, close your eyes. And you're like, oh, okay. So you really like don't get totally exposed to that. But yeah, I think it's so crazy just how much it's changed in good ways, I would say. A lot of good ways.
Well, but yeah, I mean, obviously it's completely different. But when you were young, you didn't, I mean, I'm sure you saw some of the wrestlers that they didn't shield you from all the matches. So what was your I don't know, understanding of what a female wrestler was back then? I mean, what did you think when you saw the Trish Stratuses or the Litas or even the Ivories or whomever it was at the time?
Like seeing them, it's like, oh my gosh, this is cool. Like when you're seeing the fights happening, but you do remember a lot of, oh, the bikinis and a lot of some of the other types of things getting exposed. Like you remember a lot of that too. It's so crazy just like how many different elements there were like back then and how many roles they had to play.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the women were always kind of incorporated in the storyline with, you know, maybe two of the wrestlers or something like that. But it's gotten away from that for the most part. And I don't know. I always thought that it was interesting because I think as a young man, you could aspire to be Stone Cold Steve Austin or The Rock or Triple H, but there were very, very few, female athletes I thought that young girls could aspire to be at the time. Like you said, you had the Trish Stratuses who she came in one way and then ended up toward the, you know, middle and end of her career, completely changed the conversation around Trish Stratus. The conversation wasn't, oh, she's just something good to look at, she's just a beautiful girl. No, she was like one of the greatest women wrestlers of all time. And she went out there and proved that with Charlotte. So was Trish big for you? Was it Lita? I mean, who were your influences kind of growing up?
With like moonsault and stuff, that's when I'm like, I want to learn how to do a backflip. Like that's what I remember. And I would just like want to be outside, like trying to do things like that. Cause I was a very active child and I did a lot of sports. So like, I was very intrigued. Like everything that I saw them doing athletically was like amplified for me. And I still have a fear of going like backwards on flips, but it's still something I'm like, I want to do that like her.
Right. Yeah. So you watched as a kid, did you fall out of it at all? Because I think a lot of people have that time where I watched wrestling for a little bit. I'm not a fan right now because other things are, you know, taking my attention. And did you get back into it later or were you watching all the way through?
No. So it was on for them because like my cousins and my brother were the big fans. like when I was little, I was just very into my sports and stuff like that. Like I was not like a big TV kid. Like I feel like I'm still not even like a big TV person. And so it did like fall off the map, because then you go do what you're supposed to do. I went to college and right. I'm going to go get a 9-to-5 job and go do all that. And so now my cousin's kids are coming to that age of they're watching wrestling. And I think that's how it kind of got back to me again, because I would see them like watching it. And I'm like, now it's more of maybe this is something I could aspire to do as a career. So now you have a totally different mindset, like me being like college Alex age rather than like little girl Alex age. Like now it seemed like more like, you know what? Like I think I want to do this. Like I want to try this out.
It's funny though, because when you bring up the college experience, so you went to University of Texas, right?
Texas A&M.
I'm sorry. That's a cardinal sin I just committed. That's a cardinal sin. You went to Texas A&M. That's right. I'm sorry. You went to Texas A&M for sports broadcasting, right? Or sports journalism.
Yes. That's what like my focus was on, was sports and entertainment.
And you graduated from there. And I remember it was the Row Awards. Before like the world shut down, we had the Row Awards, which were streaming on the Reality Wrestling channel as well. And afterward, we all went out and I actually got to sit with you and your sister and your mom. And we had like a little conversation.
And my mom will tell you everything about me that no one knows.
There's a lot of interesting facts that your mom gave out there. So shout out to your mom. But I knew that she was kind of taken aback a little bit after you're going to Texas A&M, prestigious university here in the state, really in the country. Everybody knows Texas A&M. And then you go to get this degree and then you're like, hey, pro wrestling. So where was that? Because I think that that's a pretty big departure from what the 9-to-5 plan was. Instead of going to an office every day or even going to a television studio every day to do a sports broadcast, you're driving for hours on end from town to town to town. You're flying to Japan. Mm-hmm. You're flying to Mexico. You're working on the weekends, not during the week. So where was that? Where did that come from? When did the idea get implanted? Okay, let's try this pro wrestling thing out.
To kind of sum up a little before, I was like, let me go after this. So right after college, like I was working in television and radio. And even that, I just didn't feel fulfilled in getting like a television and radio job out of college is very tough because it's a very competitive career path. And so, but I decided, you know what, I'm going to leave all that and I'm going to go to Dallas and I'm just going to start all over and just try to see what makes me happy. So like I literally was working like multiple jobs, like in sales and like whatever. And I was living in Uptown Dallas and I lived there for a year. And I'm just someone who I always need to be working towards something. And I felt like when I was over there, I didn't have any goals. I didn't know what I wanted to do still. And so my lease was about to end and my parents were like, before you sign another lease, come home, figure it all out. So I go home and that's when I'm really just trying to like figure everything out. So I'm back home again after being gone since whatever age for 4 years of school, 1 year working there, and then like another year working in Dallas, and I'm back home again. I'm like, this isn't supposed to happen. Like I work hard to like be in my own space, have my own career. And so there I am, and just trying to figure everything out. Like I even contemplated going to grad school to pursue creative writing, but wrestling started to get popped up again, especially being back home. And so I remember one of my best friends, she'd known me since high school. Like she always would hear me if I would mention it. She was always the one I'd mention it to. So we were back home and she just texted me one day like, I'm watching wrestling and I think you would be so great at this. And I'm like, yeah, it is really cool, huh? And I'm just like, yeah. And then so I really started to think about it, but then I'm like, no, because that's not what I'm supposed to do. I need to find something that I'm supposed to do for my life. And then we went to dinner with my family, my parents and my little sister, they went on vacation somewhere. And I was like with my aunt's family. And my cousin's daughter was watching it. And I was just watching it with her. And I'm like, this is so cool. And he goes, yeah, I don't know why you never did that. Like, he was pretty much saying, like, you're dumb. And I was like, well, I don't even know how to get into that. And then he was like, you know, there's a wrestling school down the street. It was Shawn Michaels Wrestling Academy. And then he like started Googling it. And then so then my aunt starts going like, yeah, I went to high school with Shawn Michaels. So now I'm just getting it all over the place from everybody. And I'm just like, is this like working out? And so he was like, look, so Rudy Boy Gonzalez is the trainer, blah, 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 blah. It says contact here. And I literally messaged him right then. And I was like, hey, I think I might be interested in coming in and like checking out the school. And he emailed me back right away. And he's like, okay, tryout is September 11th. Cardio wise, be ready. And I went September 11th and never left.
And so this is September 11th of what year?
2018.
So yeah, I mean, I think that's what a lot of people might find crazy is that you're still a year, I mean, a little bit over a year and a half, 2 years into the business, right? And you've kind of already made a name for yourself. But so go take me back to that September 11, 2018. You walk into Rudy Boy Gonzalez, San Antonio, Texas. Of course, Shawn Michaels, like you mentioned, this used to be his school. Rudy Boy's teaching there now. What was your first impression? Because I remember it was 2012 walking into the old it was called like the WXF gym, Wrestle Exercise Fitness. It's a great name. over there off 45 South here in Houston, I walk in to see, Booker T. I'm going to go meet Booker T. And I wasn't going to train, but I just remember going to the back and you see the two rings and you see these people wrestling around. And I don't know, in my head, for some reason, I thought that, you know, the girls would have their training session, the guys would have their training session, but it's not like that at all. It's like everybody's training together, male, female, doesn't matter. And it's loud. I mean, it's a lot louder than you expect when people are taking bumps on the mat and you're right there next to it. So for me, it was like this was a crazy world and I couldn't even imagine being involved in it. For you, when you walk into Rudy Boy Gonzalez training school on that tryout day, you're going to see if you could actually be a wrestler. What was your first impression?
Okay, so I just came ready to like work out. Like I knew from the minute I walked in that gym, everyone was going to try to get me out of there. Like, I could just feel it. Like, I was like, she doesn't belong here.
Why? Why was that? Why was that?
So I was working a part-time gym job. And so, like, I would come from work. And so, like, I still had, like, my face done up. And, like, I'm sorry. Most of my workout gear is pink. Like, it is what it is. I can't change it. So I'm like walking in, I'm in like pink yoga pants, pink tank top, like I have makeup on, and it just really looked like I had like done myself up for this. And I knew walking in, I'm like, I know this is what this looks like. Like I played sports my entire life. I know every type of feeling. Right. But I think just the athlete in me and like the competitiveness, like I'm like, okay, 100 burpees. Like I might feel like I'm dying, but I'm not going to like let you see that I'm dying and I'm going to keep doing it no matter what. Like I'm not going to like let you drive me out of here. Like, and so I walked into my house after that first day of training and I was like literally like crawling to the couch. And I told my parents, I was like, this is no joke. I had never been so beat up and tired in my life. Like it was just a whole nother like type of pain. I never even knew. I don't even know how to explain it.
I hear, but what's crazy is I hear everybody say that, right? Like everybody on their first day of training says that. And I always go back to the story that Kurt Angle told, where this is a guy who is an Olympic gold medalist, no joke, athlete his entire life, similar to yourself, an athlete whole life. He goes in there. I mean, we all know you won a gold medal with a broken freaking neck. And he goes in there and he says, when I took the first bump, I thought to myself, what the hell am I doing? this, I do not want to do this. He said it hurt like nothing that I'd ever felt before. And it's just crazy to me to hear that from everybody. So what makes you keep going? That's my question. Because when I fell off my bike when I was 7 and I scarred my whole elbow up, it was 2 years before I got on a bike again. I was scarred both, you know, physically and emotionally. So for you, you go in there, you take this bump. You're like, this is no joke. But what you just, was it the competitor in you as an athlete that said, I'm going to go back out there, I'm going to do this again?
I think so. And like, I always like tell myself, I'm like, other people have done this. Like, you're not the first person to experience this and to do this. And I'm just like, okay, if they were able to do this and get through this, like, I know I can do this. And so, I think what was like worse for me too was like running the ropes. Like, I just looked like I had whip marks across my back. Like, I have this picture and like, I am just all blue and black down my back. Like, it, I think my first week of like learning bumps, like, I bruised my ribs, so I couldn't even like breathe. I was like, like, it was just, I was just coming home and like, they're like, what's happening over there? But you keep going every single day. And I'm just like, I love this. I think it's that like little bit of craziness you have to be able to do this and like love it that much, because you really have to love this sport and want to do it to be able to be like, okay, I'm willing to put my body through some of the stuff that I am.
So you train with Rudy Boy, and how long was that initial training with him at his gym?
So until October of the next year is when I started to go to row.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so about a year ish.
About then.
So yeah, there for a year, and I remember. I don't know. It, you know, this pro wrestling circle is so small, right? I mean, everybody knows everybody. And it wasn't long to where I started seeing your name pop up a lot of places. You know, I started seeing you on social media more. I mean, all these places. And then I remember Kevin Bernhardt, who we all love, who's the executive producer, director of Reality Wrestling.
Shout out to Kevin.
You got to shout out Kevin. It was his birthday a couple weeks ago. So shout out to Kev. But I remember him telling me that you were coming down. And I didn't know, once again, I didn't know a lot about you, but I have felt like always lucky, because when I came into the industry, I came in with Booker T, right? I mean, I came in, Booker T happened to live a mile away from me, and his school was 2 miles away from me. And I was like, this is great. This is awesome. I felt privileged in that. And then what I always think was crazy is I was at the old gym, and then we have this new one, the Booker T World Gym Arena, where you walk in, there's this whole showroom and there's a gym in the back. And I feel like the crop of students who've started there are so lucky. What was it for you? Because Rudy Boy, incredible school. And then you come down to Houston, and it's like a whole new world, because everyone I talk to comes in for the first time, or even people from other independents, or even guys like the Chris Heroes of the world, they all come in. They're like, wow, this is like what it is in NXT. This is what it's like in WWE. It's a very similar vibe. What was your first initial impression when you walked in to the Booker T World Gym Arena?
So other Texas Wrestling Academy students like Max Castellanos and like Tempo, when they would come back to San Antonio, they would tell us about like Booker T's place. So it sounded like, what? There's three rings? What do you mean there's three rings? You're lying. Like, that's how we would have our conversations. So I think like the first time like I went in, it was almost like, I remember telling him, I was like, it was better than you even explained. And I was like, you didn't say about the weight room. Like, what? And I think, yeah, it is seeing just everything and how it is. Like, it is like a mini PC. And the vibe is exactly like that. And you can train, like, wherever you want and stuff like that, but it's just the atmosphere of like, it feels like, okay, I leveled up a little bit, and it makes you level up even more.
It feels like the next logical step, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is funny because I remember hearing this interview with Chris Jericho where he talked about being in WCW and the way they did things. And then he went to WWE and it was like being a Wizard of Oz. You're in Kansas and everything was black and white and kind of dreary. And then you go to WWE, it's this world of color. And I think that for a lot of people who are used to, and I mean, credit to all the other independent, you know, companies out there, but you know, most of them are run a similar way. I've done one independent shot in my life. It was in San Antonio, Texas. And I remember walking in the doors and going like, oh, okay. This is a little different than I'm used to. And there's no pre-show meeting. Like, can we sit down and talk about what's going on? Or, oh, you're not going to work with anyone on their mat? Okay. So you just want me to, oh, okay, cool. Like, and then when you're used to a wrestling show, it's like, you got to get there at a certain time. Booker's going to give you the speech, you know, in his office. This is what I need from you. This is what I want from you. Let me hear your ideas. You'll work out your ideas. And then there's a big post-mortem at the end of the night where he either tells you you did a great job or he told you you did not so great of a job and you need to do better next time. Because what I love about Book is he expects perfection, right? He expects you to go out there and hit your points because he believes in everybody on his roster and he's taught them and he knows, hey, I know that I gave you the tools. I need you to go out there and put them together. And so it's always fun for me to see him come back and either be super jazzed up like, oh man, everything went well, or you know, hey, we got to work on this. So tell me about your first experience working with Book.
Yeah, so how you were saying when you see some other independent shows on, there's not a pre-show meeting and there's not this, like, so when I went there I was like, there's a pre-show meeting, like what? And I did like it a lot better. Like I like to feel like, okay, this is what you want, because you go to a lot of places and it's like, they're like, oh, just go out there. And you're just like, okay. But so my debut show or my match was December of 2019. And it was actually a few days before I left for Stardom in Japan. And I wasn't even supposed to be on that show, but I had been going to a couple of the shows just because I had been training. So just checking out the vibe. And it was a couple days before the show. And Kevin's like, hey, do you want a match? Do you want to be on the card? And I was like, yes. I was like, I don't care if I'm going to Japan in a few days. I'm going to get on that show. And so I was just super nervous because that was probably the second match I had ever had with that type of vibe, because the pay-per-view type vibe, it was a pay-per-view. Right. I had done one pay-per-view previously for Shine Wrestling, and that was the first time I was like, so I still am going in there like, okay, I have absolutely like no idea what I'm doing, but I'm gonna just go out there and do what I can do. And so it's very nerve-wracking in that sense. And then also you're like, I might do this match and he may never put me on the show again. So it's the pressure of that also, because it's like I had just been training there and just meeting him like the few times, and I'm like, okay, now he's just gonna see me put on like the pay-per-view for the show. So I was like, okay, it's time to put on like my big girl shoes now and really prove why I want to be here and why I feel like I'll work to be here, like I and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's a pretty pressure-filled situation to walk into our Christmas show, which is typically one of the biggest shows, if not the biggest show of the year, and find out on 2 days' notice. What was your feedback from Booker? I mean, because here's the thing that shocks me sometimes when people come in, especially when they're first or second time, and they don't go and ask for feedback from a guy who's main evented WrestleMania. Like, I don't understand how people don't utilize the source more. And I've seen people do it, and it shocks me every time. I know that you're someone who always asks for feedback from everybody because you want to improve. So what was it like after that show going to talk to Book?
He was actually super happy with it. It was a short match. So I think being at training, like the couple few months I was before, just hearing what types of matches Booker likes or what he expects and like where you are on the card, like makes a difference, and how many minutes you have in like a TV match. And I'm just like, okay, like he just wants a short, simple TV match. Like, to me, I'm like, okay, like, I can do this. We had our meeting and I'm like, okay, I'm just going to give him exactly what he wants, like, and go do it the best I can. And so, like, talking to him after that, I think that's what he was most happy with. He was like, because we were the first women's match on the card. So he was like, you gave me exactly what I wanted. Like, that was exactly what I needed. Like, good job. And I'm like, that's more than enough for me.
Right. It's a good place to start off. But what's crazy to me, though, is a lot of people work their entire careers to get out, to be able to get on a plane, go to Japan and have that experience of touring Japan. Ryan Davidson did it for us recently. Of course, you did as well. Haiyun, Rex Andrews. There are a few people who've done the Japan thing. So talk to me about your experience working in Japan with only, you know, a year and change in training.
Yeah, I had my near injury there. So, I mean, once I left there, like, I felt like I didn't have, like, a lot of confidence, like, going in. Like, I have confidence, but you just know, you're like, I don't have as much experience as these people. And then you're with, like, some of the best girls in the world, and you're like, oh, my gosh, like, I don't want to mess up. I don't want to, like, look bad. How did I end up here? And so we get there. Our first show's the very next day, and I'm the very first match. So I have no one to even watch before, to, like, see how they go out there, to see this. And I'm the very first person to come out. So,
oh man, it's like being back in school, you know, like, if you had to, like, give a presentation that day, you never want to be the first one, because you're like, let somebody else set the bar and I can either surpass it or what have you. But you're going out there blind. That's crazy.
Yeah. And it was a triple threat. And so it's my first international match too. And I think you just really start to realize, like, oh, like, wrestling is a universal language. And that's what I think one of my biggest takeaways from going over there was we might not be able to communicate as well as we want, and we don't speak the same language, but we speak wrestling. And as long as we have that, like, magic happens over there, obviously, because there's a lot of foreigners who fly over there and can have great matches with someone who only knows Japanese, or can go to Mexico and they only know Spanish. And I think that was, like, the coolest thing for me to realize. And then it put, like, less pressure on me, like, coming back. So I'm like, okay, it should make it that much easier when I can actually communicate and speak English with someone than when I wasn't able to.
And I've always heard, like, in Japan, the crowd is different. Did you realize that the crowd's different? Because I always hear, like, they're not as vocal as the American crowd.
They like to clap. Like,
is that the thing?
It's very, like, sophisticated. Like, I would say, like, I'll, like, sometimes, like, go on, like, Stardom World and, like, watch some, like, old matches too, and they're just like, it's like, wow, like,
good for you, just good for you. You did that. Good for you. So okay, you come back from Japan, and when you come back from Japan, did you feel like, okay, I just went to Japan, I did a reality wrestling pay-per-view, Booker T liked what I did, I'm getting this now, I'm understanding this? Or did you still feel like, man, I got so much more to do?
I felt like I have so much more to do. I just felt more motivated than what I was, if I even knew that was possible. Like, even now, I'm still like, I don't know what I'm doing.
Right. Well, it's funny, though, Booker, he teaches so many lessons, right? Other mm-hmm. than the fact of, the actual wrestling moves or the psychology of it. But he talks about all the things that you have to do to be successful in this business. And one of them is, the one that he always talks about is, you know, in order to make it in the ring, you got to make it in the locker room, right? You mm-hmm. got to be able to go in there and go in the back, and people have to respect you. You have to respect everybody else, and you all have to work as one unit, you know, act collectively, or think collectively and act singularly. So for you, coming from Rudy Boy, coming from San Antonio, you moved down to Houston, you don't know everybody. Was it a weird experience coming to reality wrestling, trying to get along with everybody, or did you kind of fit right in?
I think it's like any experience, like you're the new kid. Like, I was the new girl. And it's been like that no matter where I've gone, like whether I've like walked into the Stardom locker room or I've walked into like the CMLL locker room. Like, you know that it's like this is your locker room. And I respect that. Like, the first time, like, I come in, like, I'm going to show you that, like, I just want to get along with everyone. Like, I want to work hard, just like I know all you do. And then, like, from there, I think just natural, like, acceptance starts to happen because people are like, oh, okay, like, she's here to work. Like, and I think that that's what I really love about, like, going international, like, especially because, like, they work their butts off. And so when they see someone come in, they tend to have this, like, different mentality about, like, American wrestlers. And so when you come in and kind of, like, break that and show them that, look, I'm not trying to get out of the conditioning. I'm not trying to get out of this. I'm not trying to get out of this. And I'm going to go through everything that you had to do. And so to show that, like, I want to be accepted, like, they really respect that.
I think that's the biggest thing, right? And it's so weird because wrestling has all these traditions, right? You have to shake everyone's hand. You got to, you know, wipe your feet before you get in the ring. But it's a business built on respect, respecting your opponent, respecting the crowd, respecting everyone in the locker room. And I think if you get that, you're gonna go far in the industry. So you have gone on something that a lot of people aspire to do, and that is a tryout with the big dog, right? WWE. Everyone, that's where you first become a fan. That's what everyone wants to work. That's where we all work toward, was we want to get to the WWE. Talk to me about that experience. Talk to me first. Was your tryout the first time you'd done anything with WWE, or did you ever do any extra work?
I had done extra work once, and that was it. And so then I had the tryout.
Okay, so let's talk about the extra work. So a lot of times WWE, they'll go to the town and they'll just call around, say, hey, we need some people to be here just in case we need anything. I remember my first time backstage at a WWE show was at a pay-per-view in Houston at Toyota Center. It was a really random day because I remember Wale was like an invited guest to book. So I'm down there with Wale and I'm like hanging out with Wale. And then we go to the back and Sting had just wrestled in the main event in what ended up being his last match. And I'm back there and you see, you know, there's Triple H. Oh, there's Chris Jericho. There's catering. That looks awesome. You know, Vince McMahon walks by. You see all the cameramen and all. I mean, it's a crazy experience. And for a wrestling fan, you try not to be the proverbial mark. You're like, act cool. I'm supposed to be here. I'm shaking everybody's hands. I'm not gonna overindulge in catering. I'm gonna get a little snack. what was your experience like? Was it, you know, the, oh my gosh, this is real now? Because that was for me. Like, when I got there, I was like, oh, this is a real place. This isn't just a place that I see on television. You can actually be here. I'm here right now. What was that experience like for you? And did you do anything on TV that day?
Yes. So it was really cool. So the very first day I had it, we got to be there. We actually, like, other row guys and me, we got to do the Moment of Bliss. And it was like Sasha Banks and Bayley were asking questions. And so we got to, like, answer questions in the audience.
Yeah, I remember this.
So it's so funny because it's like, we're just, like, all spread out. And it's like, oh, you just happen to choose all the row kids.
Yeah, right. And when they all happen to be front row, it's really weird. Did they give you the questions?
Each other? Okay.
Did they give you the questions to ask?
We were, like, told, like, what to say.
Right. And what was going through your mind? Because, you know, when I was there, I was just hanging out backstage with a rapper and Booker T, but you were there to be on national television. This is the USA Network. This is Monday Night Raw. The biggest show in wrestling history is Monday Night Raw when it comes to television, and millions of people watch it every week. Was all that going through your head, or did you treat it like, this is a show, I'm a performer, I have a role, I'm gonna go out there and do it?
My entire thoughts the entire time I'm there is, I'm like, I don't want to do anything that's going to get me fired. I'm not even hired, but I don't want to get fired. So, like, they're telling me,
I want to get me
fired. Like, I don't want to mess up on this question. Like, am I sitting right in this chair? Like, will they be mad if I'm looking this way? Like, you just overanalyze everything. So I think it was just more, I want to do this job and them not get mad at me for anything.
And then, I mean, I guess you do it. And did you go to the back and be like, did I do all right? Everyone fine with me? Everyone cool? Yeah.
And we were all sitting there and it was like, so then like Sasha Banks like walked by and she's like, thanks for asking that question. And I was like, thanks for asking the question. And I remember like Zach Mason, he was like, oh my gosh. Oh my gosh.
Right. It's like when someone, it's like telling somebody you're welcome when they say, oh, thanks for everything you did out there. It's like, oh, you're welcome. Like, who the hell am I? I remember telling them.
You have to communicate sometimes because you're just so nervous.
Yeah. Yeah. I even remember we had a reality wrestling show, like I said, where Michael Cole came in. And I just remember after the show was over or when he was leaving, I just shook his hand. I said, hey, thank you for coming out tonight. And then he said, no, thank you. And I said, oh, you're welcome. And I was like, wait a minute. I'm not supposed to say that. That's not how this goes. I just accept the thank you, Brad, and keep moving.
I promise I don't speak like this all the time.
I'm sure that they know, though, too. I'm sure that everyone knows, like, okay, these are people who wanted to do this forever. And now they're, you know, here and they don't want to mess up. So that was your first experience. And then you, like a lot of people do. I mean, you got to network to get work. I'm sure that you exchanged information with certain people. And then you got an invitation to come try out at the Performance Center in Florida. And again, like you're super early in your career still right now, but at the time, even earlier, and you're having to go over there to WWE, that has to be super intimidating.
Oh, yeah. So the tryout was April of last year. So I had only been back from – I got the invitation like a little – a bit more than a month after I got back from Japan. So then after that, all I was focused on was like getting ready for the tryout. And then, so you get to the tryout and you're like talking with people. And to me, it was almost like that feeling of like going to college again. So like, for right. example, like in high school, you have like your prom queen and like your valedictorian and like this kid who are all like considered top at something, and then you go to college and it's like, oh yeah, I was prom queen. Oh yeah, so was I. And then it's like, okay, so you're having like all these people with huge achievements or whatever, vice versa. So you're like talking to people and they're like, oh, you're a wrestler. And I was like, how do you know? And they're like, your hair. And I was like, oh, what do you do? And they're like, oh, I was in like the Olympics for volleyball. And I'm like, oh my gosh. Oh my gosh, like what?
That's gotta be crazy,
like,
right?
Conversations with like the like some of the best athletes in the world, and you're just like, this is in like that's what's like intimidating, and you're like, okay, I'm the wrestler.
Right. No, I feel like though sometimes I repeat myself. I feel like sometimes I'm Booker because I always like use, I think he has some of the best phrases ever, but he says, you got to know how to change your levels, right? You have to know, you know, he always says you can have your pants sagging on the corner with your boys, but if you go to the White House, you got to know how to change your levels, dress up, be in the suit, be presentable. Did you feel like, okay, I know you said it was from like high school to college. Did you feel like, okay, I got to level up here. Like now I'm here. This is real. I'm around volleyball players and who are in the Olympics, and this person's an actress. This person was, you know, Division I college athlete or what have you. Did you feel like pressure's on, but I got to level up because I'm a wrestler. This is what I do. You know, this is what I've been involved with. Just kind of what was your mentality on the day that the tryout started?
Mm-hmm. So I always take my training seriously, and the athletes there, they take their training seriously. So it is really cool to be in that atmosphere of like, you really have no room. For me, I didn't think I had any room to slack or any reason to just like be like, okay, like this really is business. And you can see that because even the ones who aren't wrestlers, like they understand training and I mean, some of the best athletes in the world. So that's definitely where, okay, like, this is business and I'm going to be doing these burpees with business.
Right. So what is the WWE trial? That's what I want to know. Like, what is the training? What do you have to do? Is it, you know, cause it's over like what, 3 days or something, or 2 days, something like that?
It's like 3-4 days. Cause 1 day is like your medical stuff and all that. But it's just some of the hardest conditioning you'll probably ever do in your life. And I feel like they really are there to motivate you, but try to break you at the same time. But again, motivate you, because I think that is like what it takes to be it. I mean, it's WWE. It's the most prestigious wrestling brand out there. And so to be able to be a part of that, I think they just really want to see, like, it is a mental game, and you can have these great athletes, but if they don't have like the mental capacity to be able to really fight through this or really push through this, then I think that's really just what they're trying to see, because they all know who they're bringing in. Right. So they know these people can get through this, or they know that you can do 450, or they know you can do springboard, or they know you can do this. So they're just really trying to test you mentally, I feel like.
And after that process was over, did you feel like, okay, I know I was here. I think this was good for me to get my feet wet. Now I know if I have to come back, you know, I know what to do. Or what was your kind of immediate thought process after you're on the plane back to Texas?
Well, at first, like, being in that type of atmosphere, like, that is absolutely what I feel like I should be doing, because it's like that's what I do. And so being able to be somewhere in a facility like the Performance Center in Orlando, you're just like, whoa, again, it's like, I leveled up. Like, oh, you're like aspiring to be there now. And so, yeah, afterwards, I really had no idea how I did or like what I did. But you start like overanalyzing, like, you're like, man, if I didn't stand this way over here when they were looking and I was standing this way, maybe that would have made a difference. Like, you start overanalyzing everything. But it took about 6 weeks, I think. So that's where I like started to feel a little bit hopeful, because I was like, why haven't I heard anything? And just talking with people over there. And it was just more of, I was really early in my career, so I just needed to go out there and like keep branding and like building my name and stuff like that. But they were like, you get the whole like spiel, like, overall, like, you were a standout, we loved you, like, this and that, but just go do this. So you're like, okay, let me now like reassess myself and figure out what I can do, because that was my whole plan all along coming back from Stardom and moving to Houston to go to Raw, was to continue to improve and continue to brand myself and build a bigger name. And so then I had a tryout, so then I focus on that. But it's like, okay, we got to keep going with the plan. We got to keep working hard, keep branding, keep name building. And so I was like, okay, I can do that.
You bring up something interesting, and I think that it's something that a lot of people, I won't say a lot of people, but some people lack the foresight of doing. And you have always had a real strong social media presence. You have a YouTube channel. You put all kinds of different content on your own channel. And you used the term twice just then in that story of branding. And it's big. I mean, right now, I mean, you have pink hair, you're the pink dream. A lot of pink, but you've branded yourself. I mean, people can recognize you. Like I said, someone knew that you were a wrestler just by the color of your hair. They're like, oh, you must be the wrestler because of your look. Where did that come from? Was that something that you knew coming into the business? I need to have an identity. I need to have a brand. It's one thing to be Alex Gracia. It's another thing to be the pink dream. Was that something that you always knew, or did you have to learn that along the way?
I had an idea. So I did learn a lot about like marketing myself and branding like while I was in college, because I did sports reporting. And so like that's when I was like, would do my own interviews on YouTube, kind of doing them the way I wanted to do them, and having like little shows and little podcasts that I felt like were more related to me, that I think people who watch me would enjoy a little more than just being like, okay, talking about stats and this and that. Like, I like talking about the fun stuff, but I think it's just always been like think of like your favorite characters or superheroes. Like, you are able to know what they look like, what they're wearing, what they do. And so coming into wrestling, like when you I feel like you just have to know to do that. And I know it's not something you just know to do that, but it was something I was kind of thinking about like from the beginning. So then when it was time, oh, okay, I need to start designing my gear, this and that, I'm like, what's something that like I want to be consistent? And I'm like, I do like changing my gear up like here and there, but I'm like, okay, a color can be consistent if they know I'm always like going to wear this color. I'm like, that's one of the most things that I think like you can keep consistent in something. And I was like, that was just the easiest thing for me. I was like, okay, like pink, what can I go off this? What can I go off this? Now let me start putting in elements that I like, elements about me, things that I feel like I can, from my life experiences, I can like put into the pink dream. And so I've just always like played off that. And I really don't, especially being early still, like I really try to amplify everything, because like I want people to get it and to understand it and to be like, oh, that's probably Alex's bag, or oh, that's probably oh, pink dream, oh this, oh that, oh there's pink, like I wonder if Alex is there. Like I wanted them to start like having that like magnet connected to me.
And then everybody, when they get into the industry, they have certain goals that they want to hit, right? They either want to, you know, go to WWE, they want to do this, they want to do that. But everybody at some point wants to be champion, right? You want to be the champion. You want to hold the belt. Everyone has always seen the belts getting held up. Everyone wants to be a champion. Your first championship that you ever won in wrestling, correct me if I'm wrong, was the Reality Wrestling Diamonds Division Championship. Is that correct? Yeah. I remember coming up to you after the show, and you know, you congratulate somebody on a title win, and you're like, this is my first title ever. And I was like, wow, that's kind of crazy. And this is, it's a great first title to have. You know, Kylie Rae, so many people have had it. What was your reaction when you found out, I don't know if it was the day of, the day before, the night before, whenever it was, that you were going to be the women's champion of the Reality of Wrestling?
Like, you really don't even, like, believe it. Like, things are told to you that, just so, like, quickly and, like, nonchalantly that, you're just like, I don't know how to react right now. And it doesn't really hit you till like the moment happens. But I think it was very emotional for me, because like I had gone through a very tough year previously, like emotionally and all that. And so you start to like ask yourself, like during some of those moments, like, why am I doing this? And you constantly like take yourself back to that, like, why am I doing this? Why am I doing this? What am I doing this for? Like, what's my purpose here? And I had to like constantly like evaluate myself and just be like, you know what, like go work hard, bust your butt every single day. And that's where I found like my happy place, was at training and in the ring and being at row. So then once you finally win the title, you finally feel like all my hard work paid off. Like this is the feeling that I was working for, and like it was so worth it.
But doesn't it feel like pressure's on even more? Because now like you're the standard bearer. You're the champion. You got to go out there and be the champion, right?
The pressure never goes away.
Do you get nervous every time you go out there?
Yes.
Yeah.
So nervous. And it's so weird, but I forgot who I was talking to. I think I was like explaining it to my mom, because I was like, I get really bad anxiety with a lot of things. And you would almost, like, I almost thought that it was, like, wrestling would almost, like, amplify it. But I was like, I feel like when I'm in the ring and I'm wrestling is the only time I have, like, full control of myself to where I'm actually, like, being myself. Like, it's crazy. So you get nervous because you always want to do your best. And you know now that any little mistake, when it's, like, can be all over the internet in minutes, or people might talk about it or make fun of you or be like, she's not good or this or that. And I have to sometimes, like, sit back too and be like, okay, you have only been doing this, like, 2 years. Like, you need to, like, calm down and, like, not put as much pressure on myself either. Cause it's like, I have high expectations for myself. And I expect huge things from what I'm working for, but I know that it is, like, it's, you aren't told to, like, go build a house. Like, it's every day putting the brick. So I sometimes need to, like, even get myself to, like, calm down and be like, okay, it's okay. Like, we'll do better next time.
Right. It's so weird though, too, because a lot of times, especially reality wrestling, you see a lot of the same people in the crowd, right? Like, you see a lot of the hardcore fans, which we have some of the greatest fans of all time. And I can't wait for us to be back there at the World Gym Arena so we can entertain the Ro Nation like only we can do. But it's weird that even in front of the same people, you still get nervous. Like, I go out there, I'm not even heard, but I get the butterflies start going. And you're like, oh man, like, I got to go out there and perform again. So it's weird to have. And Booker and I were talking on our show yesterday, the Hall of Fame, and he was like, I get nervous every time to this day. Even when he goes out there just to be Booker T on television, he gets nervous every time. That's what he said. He said, I get nervous every time. And if he's getting nervous, you know, then I think that it's okay. But another thing is this. I remember back in the day, you know, YouTube has been such a great resource for reality wrestling and for everybody in the world. This is how we connect, especially during this time. But I remember back in the day, a friend of mine, he's a rapper, his name's Kirko Bangs, and he called me and he was like, hey, we're doing this music video. Can you come be in it? I need someone to play a cop. And I'm like, sounds like me. I'll go do it, right? So I go and I play this cop in Kirko's music video, and it debuted on World Star Hip Hop. And I go and I look at it, and it's got like 1.5 million views. And I'm like, oh, wow, 1.5 million people just saw something that I did. I had no speaking role. Yeah. I'll find it and I'll send it to you. I don't remember the name of the song, but you know, and I just was standing there looking, you know, stone faced, but you know, over a million people saw it or whatever. And I thought, man, this is crazy. 1 million people saw something that I was a part of. And now with the reality wrestling, you've been a part of several matches on our YouTube channel that over 1 million people have seen. Some of them, I think, are 4.5 million or more than that. What is that like for you? Because a lot of times, you know, 1,000 views, 2,000 views, it's all great. But when some of these pop and there's 1 million people just watching me wrestle, or 4 million people, you know, the same amount of people who are on Monday night watching Monday Night Raw just watch this match. That's crazy. What was it? What's it like for you to, because I see your post, another 1 million views.
I mean, he's like, hey, another one. And I'm like, oh, well, that's exciting. Let me post it.
Right. What's that feeling like, though? That's got to be insane to know 1 million people just watch me wrestle.
I mean, it's definitely mind blowing. Like, again, you're just like 1 million, like that number doesn't seem like that many people are like, I want to be like, why are you watching me? Like, it like start to like evaluate. So I'm like, I can like keep this up and like get even more people. Or I'm like, just, I'll like go back and like look at those matches sometimes and just be like, okay, what did I like about it, or what do I think? And a lot of those ones I actually would ask to have film study with from Booker and stuff. So when he would say like good things, I'm like, oh, okay, so then maybe other people saw a lot of good things too. So that's pretty cool. But I think that's what puts the pressure even more, is that even if there aren't a lot of people like in the audience, but that you can capture that many people and like entertain that many people like on a level because of like what we're able to do media wise, like you're just like, okay, I need to always go out and like do the best me that I can, because you don't know who's watching.
You never know. You never know who's watching. You never know who can give you that next opportunity. And speaking of next, what is next for Alex Gracia? Once the world gets back to normal, once we have pro wrestling fans in pro wrestling venues and we're wrestling and entertaining them, what's next for you? What's on the goal sheet? What's on the bucket list for Alex Gracia?
You know, this quarantine thing is just still so like crazy. Like it happens so fast.
I know. Well, that's when I brought up the rewards thing for it. It's like, we're all out, we're shaking hands, we're having fun, we're taking pictures. And then it was like 2 days later, the world shut down.
Yeah. It's like, well, I don't know. I there were so many things planned, and like, especially last month, so many things I was looking forward to, that I felt like, okay, this could be like the next step, or like, this is my next thing. And there are just so many possibilities. But I think like, especially starting off going back to CMLL, just it really like opened my eyes and refreshed my feelings again as to like why I love wrestling so much. And I just love being like around people with like drive and like traveling the world and like getting to see different things and just that. And it just started to make me feel like, okay, you know what? Like I'm okay with whatever my next step is, because I feel like when you work hard, like good things will start to happen with you. And then, so then of course I come back, I go like to Orlando, but then I get sent back because quarantine, and now we're in quarantine. And then like everything that I have pretty much the rest of the year is like canceled. But I'm just trying to control what I can control right now. Like I would love to be signed with a company that really sees something in me and believes in me, because like, I will show them that it's like, I will work hard for you. And I want to do like the best me for you. So just, I really need to like, I feel like prepare myself for that, because again, it's always the leveling up, and it's not just mentally, but then also physically. So I'm just trying to get ready for like any opportunity. That's really just why I'm training so much, and really just trying to get my mind right, because I feel like after this quarantine, like a lot of good things will start to happen for people. And so you just got to be ready.
All right. I like that. Now, real quick, rapid fire, a couple things. So everybody always likes to know like the behind the scenes of what goes on. This is the reality of wrestling. I want to know some of the real deal. Who, in your opinion, in the locker room is the funniest person in the locker room?
I think Clay is funny.
Clay Roberts. Clay Roberts he's a different funny. You know what I mean? I don't know.
That dry humor is what gets me.
All right. Who do you think is, when you need advice from somebody, who's the first person you go to?
Ryan or Will.
Ryan Davidson or Will all day?
All day.
Okay. And in your opinion, who's the biggest heel in the locker room? Now, I don't mean who's the biggest bad person. Gino, yes. That's what everyone says. Gino is the heel. He is the heel. He runs people to death, doesn't he?
Yes. And he like, it makes him happy.
It does. He gets a weird sense of pleasure out of it. He's a very,
very strange. Like, I'm just like, I guess.
And finally, what's the one piece of advice or the one thing that Booker T has told you that you'll keep in your mind forever?
Oh gosh. There's
a lot of great Bookerisms, right? There's like, preparation is the only luck you're ever going to have. You got to, you know, there's levels to life. My favorite one is, if you're 100%, you speak up 100% of your time. If you're 99%, you keep your mouth shut. Those are all great ones. Is there anything that he told you?
I always like have in my head, like naturally, now that you say that, because it's like, whenever I go somewhere, I hear that. So I'm just like, keep my mouth shut. Like, yeah. I think it's just I would have to say that one, because it's just like instilled in me now. It's like, don't say anything, Alex.
Unless you're 100%, right? Well, Alex Grassi, I appreciate you taking the time. I know you got a channel, you got social media, you got all kinds of stuff. Let the people know where they can find you.
Yeah, so on Instagram and Twitter, it's AlexGracia3. And then on YouTube, find Alex Gracia. I'm trying to put some more stuff on there with this extra time. My camera's about to go out, so that's a whole nother thing. I need a new camera.
Well, there we go. Maybe after quarantine, you can find one. Or maybe if Gino has it, we can steal it from him. But Alex, I appreciate you taking the time. This is the first episode of Reality Check, The Pink Dream. Alex Gracia. Yes,
thank you. We'll
Oh, Brad, what have you done now?